You're listening to CPC Together, a podcast produced by Central Peninsula Church in the San Francisco Bay Area, where we talk about pretty much everything. Hello, hello, hello. Hello, welcome.
You have a CPC. Very distinct, I feel like you have a distinct podcast voice.
I know, you said that.
Hello,
before.
Hello, hello. Yeah. See, it's because you mock my laugh all the time. I have to find something. I got to find some dirt on you.
I'm just trying to think where I go in my head when I start the podcast, because I kind of normalize out later, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just the very...
It's getting rolling.
It's the very beginning. Hey, CPC.
It's kind of like when I was learning how to drive a stick shift, my dad took me out to a local high school in the parking lot, and all he did is he said, listen, you're going to drive about 100 yards that way, and you're going to go backwards about 100 yards. Once you can get out of first gear, you know how to drive a stick. And then he just left me in the car to figure it out. It's kind of like that with the podcast. You're just trying to get out of first gear.
Yeah, totally. How did that work, by the way?
I know how to drive a stick. So, yeah, it worked. I'm pretty sure I almost ruined that little truck I had. But it was my first car, so it worked. I got out of first gear.
My first car was a Toyota Tercel 87.
Toyota Tercel.
And I maxed it out on Springville Road in Iowa, 85 miles an hour.
85. Isn't that the speed that Marty McFly needs to hit to go back to the future?
That the flux capacitor engages. But here's the crazy part. 80,
that's not very fast.
I just saw that car, not that car, but
I saw a Toyota Tercel.
That year, an 87 Toyota Tercel, it's hanging out at the Knob Hill in Redwood Shores. She's there every day. I kind of want to like put a note on
I
the
love
window
your car.
Like, I will buy this one.
It's that way it can be Olivia's first car?
It's got to be worth like $500. It's the biggest piece of junk
Mine was
ever.
A Dodge Dakota. Stripped
Those
down.
Are nice. Like a truck.
It was a little tiny truck though. Like really tiny truck. No, it was wasn't even a crew cab. It was just literally a three-seater, a little one bench row. It had the wind-up windows, stick shift, maybe a tape player. Like it was like stripped down to like the bones, but
Dodge Dakota.
I love that truck, man.
Yeah, man. I just got back from spring training.
Yeah, you did.
First ever. Have you ever been?
I have not. And one of these years, it's on my bucket list to do the spring training. One of these years, my dad and my brother, I'm sure we'll make a trip down there.
It's on. It has been on Katie's bucket list, and March 12th was her birthday, and so
we
took a little. I have a family member down there because the hotels are
crazy,
astronomical.
Expensive. Yeah. It's all that seasonal pricing,
like $600 a night for like a normie, like a Days Inn
normie.
but
and here's the thing. It didn't used to be like that. Like that was the allure of spring training. It was like dirt cheap. You just go down there and all that, and then. Obviously, everyone figured it out.
It's great, though, man. I'll tell you, I am starting to fall in love with the nostalgia of baseball.
Oh yeah, that's what half of loving baseball is all about.
Yeah, because the games are like, I wouldn't say it's the kind of sport where I'm like intensely watching every single little thing. I mean, I am. Like we're sitting there,
and
we're watching
there.
It, but you're not really. There's intense moments,
but baseball is like the soundtrack of summer. It's just on in the background, and it's the best sport. Just to like, I love. Like I jumped in my car. I think it was this past Sunday after church. I turn it on. KMBR's on the radio, and I hear John Miller's voice, and it's just like all is right in the world.
And 3-2,
It's perfect, man. The sound of base. It is hard to beat the sound of baseball.
Yeah, that AM radio vibe.
And you're just sitting out in the sun, having a hot dog, watching America's Pastime. There's nothing better.
There was I had a little snafu. I bought tickets for the A's game on her birthday because they were playing the A's, Battle of the Bay. And... We decided we were going to do another one kind of last minute. So I'm going on and I found like an old StubHub gift card that someone gave me. So I'm like, I'm going to get the nice tickets, you know?
Yeah.
So I start looking for like the good tickets and I see these tickets, not even like a real row. And it says WC.
Yeah.
You know what that stands for?
I'm trying to figure out.
I didn't know. I was like, dude, WC must be some kind of like club WC. Level or I'd never been to the little park there.
Yeah. Yeah. So I haven't been there either, but
we go up to the lady. I'm like, babe, we have good seats. WC. You've never even seen it before. WC. We go up and the lady's like, oh, you guys are in the wheelchair section. And I'm like,
oops.
We both kidding. Like each other. WC.
I was thinking like walking concourse. Like,
I could not for the life of me
figure out what it was.
And so we went, and it actually ended up being kind of nice. She just said, you know, there's this guy that sits where you bought seats.
Yeah.
Would you mind if he sat with you? They're your seats. You don't have to let him. I'm like, we're going to let him sit. We're not taking it. We're not, you know, it's this big old huge area. We don't have wheelchairs. Yeah. Like, yeah, we'll scrunch over here and sit together.
Of course we'll let him have the spot. So good.
Oh. So yeah, we were in the WC during the Dodgers game, which was a little sad. It was a little sad.
I didn't catch I'll kind of track spring training. I don't necessarily watch every spring training game.
Yeah.
But it's coming, man. Opening day is coming.
The only thing that was negative was there was a old guy that kept, he would like, I think the WC is where people just go when they see no one sitting there.
Yeah, yeah.
So this guy like saw that there was a chair near us, and so he came and like sat down on Katie's side. So Katie's between us, and he's just like being such a creepo.
Yeah.
He's telling Katie about, you know, his fourth marriage and you know, well, I just wondered if you were blind when I first sat down. And we're like, what? He's like, well, when I saw who you were married to, I was like, what the heck, man? I'm right here. I was like, wait till I go get a hot dog first.
Come on, guy. Get out of here.
Anyway, besides those two things, it was a pretty awesome experience.
What was your favorite part of the trip?
Well, it was pretty basic. Sun.
Our long lost friend in the Bay Area.
Dude, I didn't know how much it's been I've been like kind of like sad.
Yeah.
And I go down there and we're just sitting. I mean, it was absolutely, you guys were getting drenched, like
hammered.
I saw like water. Trees falling down and I'm there and there's this like beautiful breeze. It's 75. I'm getting a little sunburn, but like the perfect kind of
starting
sunburn.
To get a little worried though. You're like, I need a little, little sunblocky on. Yeah.
It was so magical. And, you know, just being there with Katie without kids, it was pretty fun. It was a good hang.
That's awesome.
But I think I'm going to be into the Giants this year. It might be a hard year to be into the Giants, but I'm going to be.
Things aren't looking great, but, you know, third place is something in the division. We'll fight for that. But come on board, man. Baseball's where it's at.
All right. So you opened your message with this whole WeWork
phenomenon
plan
or whatnot. Yeah. Have you seen that documentary, by the way?
No.
The Rise and Fall of the $47 billion Unicorn, I think it's called. It's really good.
Is that so? That's where you got this?
That sparked in my mind as I was thinking about just like work culture and kind of the all-consuming nature of the Bay Area. Well, and it started from, it started from this book by Carolyn Chen, Work, Pray, Code. And she essentially looks at, I think I mentioned on Sunday, she essentially looks at, you know, what happens when the workplace becomes religion in the Bay Area. So that got me thinking. Then I remembered that documentary, and then I was just Googling around that and came across a few op-ed pieces and those were some of the ones that I had quoted.
So give me a quick overview. What did they say?
So this is from an op-ed article in the New York Times, and the title is called "Why Are Young People Pretending to Love Work?" And Erin Griffith is the author of this, and so she's writing about the WeWork culture. And she says, rather than just renting desks, that's what WeWork is, a shared working space, I think like Airbnb, but for an office desk. She says, rather than just renting desks, the company aims to encompass all aspects of people's lives in both physical and digital worlds. The ideal client, one imagines, is someone so enamored with the WeWork office aesthetic that she sleeps in a Wii Life apartment, works at a Rise by Wii gym, and sends her children to a Wii Grow school.
They eat Wii bananas.
Yeah, Wii grown bananas or something like that. Yeah. Like, it's just this vision of work. Like, if we're going to find meaning in work, like this company WeWork is just saying, let's just go all in. And let's just not only find your meaning, find your whole life and identity in work. And so they've just pushed into this. And that's that, like I said, that documentary, The Rise and Fall of the $47 billion unicorn, is essentially about that almost like cult-like move that WeWork made to try to just encompass everything about your life. And, you know, I think as we were saying right before we hit record is, you know, it's almost like they said the quiet thing out loud.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, if you look at all of the particularly, you know, the trend that our area set, the Facebooks, and this is I'm not trying to indict any company in particular. It's just the water we swim in. So it's like, you know, Google is the first and gets all of this amazing food and, you know, free lunches, free, you know, meals. Then Facebook opens up. I don't know if you've been to their Menlo Park.
Yes, I have.
Like it's Disneyland, wild, basically. Like you walk down this little town and
it's crazy. And
the whole thing, you know, maybe they didn't ever say it, but it's like the whole thing is, just please live here.
Spend every waking moment here, which again, like is a good impulse in the sense they're saying, let's make it an encouraging work environment. But let's also not be so naive to not think there's a bottom line for them in which you, in literally allowing your work to encompass your whole life. Certainly there's some motives that can be ulterior to that. And this isn't, you know, I was trying to parse this out a little bit on Sunday. This is no indictment on work. Like we were meant to work.
Right.
We were created to work. And so work is, I think, actually imperative to what it means to be human. I think you see that with God again in Genesis 1 and 2. You see it at the end of the story in Revelation 21 and 22. Like it's a part of who we are, but it has a role, not the role in our life. And so how do we resist a little bit of that kind of workaholism or that work culture that wants to consume every corner of who you are?
Yeah. Because when I think the reason that we can buy into that is we buy into this narrative that surrounds us that said, if you can just make a certain amount, if you can just accumulate a certain amount there, you know, then you can achieve this dream and you can be happy. Mm-hmm. Those gods that you said, you know, accomplishment and in accumulation. So, I mean, I remember very vividly when I was, you know, just starting to work, you know, and I think I worked, my mom got me a job at a title company and
I just love hearing about all these different jobs. You've had so many different.
On the weekends, I did birthday parties. And then during the week, I worked at an escrow office.
Yeah, you were signing mortgages on the weekdays.
Oh, my gosh.
Parties on the weekends. And, slinging mattresses much later. Shout out to Mancini's.
It was, and I remember thinking, I have arrived. Maybe I was making $2,000 a month or something.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what else could I possibly need? Like, this is more money than I could ever imagine.
Yeah.
You know, and guess what? It didn't take very long, you know? And then, you know, you keep going and you have these like number in my head. Oh, I remember, I can't imagine what it's going to be like if I ever can make this amount.
Yeah.
And then you get there and you're like, oh
yeah,
you know, and, or even like driving a really nice car.
Yeah.
You know, like I rented
Satisfy or
they upgraded me to a Porsche Macan Enterprise. Cause I had like a bunch of points or something and it was so cool for a couple hours.
Yeah.
And then,
You're still stuck on I-5 or whatever it is.
At the end of the day, you're like, it's a Volkswagen, you know, like it's just a car.
Yeah.
But we can let these narratives drive us. And, as our buddy Vince just told us, like we let it numb us a little bit.
Yeah.
And we just kind of blindly go towards these goals that don't bring us
satisfaction. Yeah. And everything in our world moves us towards that. And so it's so easy to get caught up in that rat race because it's just normalized. And so, like, I don't know, I've always thought there's kind of two things that always are in my head when we have this conversation about our particular area is one, our history of the gold rush. You know what I mean? Like there's something about this particular area on the West Coast where people had ran here to strike gold. And I think the tech boom and all that is just another iteration of that. And so there's a sense where in kind of the ethos of this area is come here, make a ton of money, change the world, and then move away and your dreams are fulfilled. So there's that. And then I think there's the pressure of just the expensive, like the cost of living in this area kind of necessitates that to exist. Mm-hmm. There's this, you have to kind of be successful. So there's something in the air that's like, you know, this external, both in the DNA and as well as this kind of external pressure that if you're going to survive, you have to excel, you have to thrive. And so it's this kind of constant push. And then you layer in. So that speeds up your life, right? In a way where you're just frantically working. But then there's this other aspect of it where, I mean, there's just the opportunities for entertainment and leisure and experiences are all just so visceral. I mean, we have some of the best restaurants in the world here. We have Tahoe a couple hours away. We have beautiful beaches. I mean, it's kind of a
Pacifica Taco Bell.
We have a Taco Bell on a beach.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Who like, else gets that?
What more could you want? A little cheesy gordita crunch and you're catching some waves, you know, all at one
time.
And
it's a cantina, yeah. Which means you can also get booze.
But it's like, we just have this, like when we don't fill our life with work, we just jam it packed with leisure activities, which feels strange, but it's, you know, when we look at the ache of our soul, that idea of needing rest at our core, like those things don't satisfy, they don't get there. And that's, I think, again, as we were just talking about, this busyness is rooted both in kind of hedonism as well as a workaholism. We just jam every moment. We wring out every moment for experience of some sort.
So as a follower of Jesus, like, I feel like the closer you try to engage living in an alternative way, the mm-hmm. closer you try to engage living the way that Jesus wants, and in terms of what we're talking about, let's say living your life with a rhythm of Sabbath.
Yeah.
In kind of contradiction to accumulation and accomplishment, it makes me feel like if you really look at it and you look at how it's going to impact your life, it can feel kind of impossible. Mm. Like, how do we even begin to engage something? Like what would you say to that person who's looking at their life and they're saying, look, I got a mortgage or I got rent.
Yeah.
You know, I have club volleyball.
Yeah.
Which is bankrupting me. And then I have, you know, all this stuff, and you look at it and you say, okay, I have to achieve this amount. Yeah. I'm this busy. I have these things going on. Like, I can't even fathom living like this. If I tried, I would have to drop something that's so important. I'd be behind, you know.
Yeah.
How do we even begin starting living counter culture like that against the grain?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And I think there's a sense where, you know, I think even at their core, like accomplishment and accumulation aren't inherently bad things. But I think as the follower of Jesus just has to ask, like, how do those things impact our intimacy with the Lord, which in some ways is, again, if Jesus is right, which I'd stake my life on the fact that he is, that he's come to bring life and life to the fullest, then at some point we have to challenge, like, if this is hindering us from following Jesus, is it worth it? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, often Jesus is just going to allow us to try to wrestle with that tension. And, you know, I think there's a, there's a level which we just kind of, do we trust the Lord that there is a different way and a better way? What is our ultimate goal? And I think there's, you know, I think the hard part is if our life is running at that kind of pace where we jam it with experience or work or whatever it is, like to follow Jesus on top of that is exhausting. Like, it's just, because what it becomes then is an addition to. But when we can get to the
Jesus
place,
is one more thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's one more commitment.
Soccer, Jesus. Yeah,
work demands, presentation, try to follow Jesus. Like,
that's profound, Kevin. I feel like in many ways, I think that's kind of the temptation is to sort of squeeze
Jesus,
squeeze him in.
Yeah, and this is what we haven't had a Willard quote in a while, but Dallas Willard would talk about this is he'd call it the secret to the easy yoke. Right? Because remember that Matthew 11, Jesus says, come to me all who are weary and I'll give you rest. My yoke is easy. My burden is light.
Oh, I always thought that was talking about an egg. Like over easy.
Yeah. My scrambled yolks. My scrambled yolks are easy. I like them runny. But what Willard is getting at, he's like, it's harder to squeeze Jesus in than it is to make Jesus the center of who you are. He's like, once you make it to the center of who you are, actually following Jesus becomes easier because you're not trying to compete with other things.
Interesting.
And I think Sabbath is one of those that if you try to add it in, I mean, I think you'll burn yourself out. But fundamentally, I mean, if you think about even the kind of the pushing our first kind of two habits in this rule of life that we're chasing after are not about adding things. They're actually about subtracting things.
Yeah.
Spend time in silence and solitude. That's an invitation for you to actually subtract busyness to sit with the Lord. Sabbath is the same. It's an invitation not to add on a day of commitments and all this, but rather it's saying maybe you need to subtract some things from your life. And you'll have to do that work of like, what are the things in which you need to withdraw from? You know, those are hard. It's not always clear answers. Sometimes it is club volleyball that you have. And, you know, we've got a softball game this Saturday for Adley. We're going to go to and enjoy and, you know, cheer her on and all that. But it's the overall kind of arc or trajectory of your life. Like if it is just this constant barrage of go, 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 you're just crowding out the Lord. And so then when you try to follow Jesus, of course it burns you out because you're trying to do more instead of allowing that to be the core, the center that organizes the rest of your life. That's the way, that's the secret to the easy yoke.
I think about this, this invitation of Jesus and sort of like the mercy and grace in his invitation to say, I know how you were created.
Mm-hmm.
I know what you were meant for.
Yeah.
And you're doing it wrong. I mean, go ahead. Yeah. Kudos. Like if you want to
go for it. Yeah. Go ahead. For it.
But you're going to always feel this pull at best.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just straight pain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Suffering.
Anxiety. Stress,
but I've created you for something easier, for something more life giving than this. And you kind of went into from the very beginning.
Yeah.
Genesis speaks to this. And even when you go into the Ten Commandments and they talk about Sabbath, mm-hmm. it refers back to Genesis, the creation story and how this is in our fabric of our creation.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. You know, there's like, we have to ask the question, like, why did God rest? He's not tired. He wasn't exhausted. But yet he still rests. Like there's something profound if we ask that question as to why God would do that. And I think, you know, I believe theologically what he's doing is he's actually informing us in the way the world functions. And so by, you know, the metaphor I played off of that was that in Genesis, when he works 6 days and stops one, he bakes into creation a rhythm of work for six, rest for one. And this balance between, not necessarily even a balance, but a rhythm to work, which is good, essential to who we are, and rest, which is good and essential to who we are, and both find their dignity and purpose, work and rest, by their kind of mutual relationship. Like one without the other doesn't function. If you rest too much, if you just lounge around all day, you act like that's actually detrimental to your soul, you know? And I think of when people lose a job and they lose meaning and they lose purpose, like there's a sense in which you were meant to create, like that's a problem. You were meant to do that. But on the flip side, again, the issue we've been attacking quite hard, I think, is if you just work all the time, if it's always on, always go, 7 days a week, grinding out, whatever it is, that will do a violence to your soul. Mm. And so when God rests after 6 days of work and one in rest, he's instituting this sort of rhythm. You know, and I think this is, you know, we thought about, we didn't end up pulling the trigger, but I thought about opening my sermon with kind of a audio demonstration of it.
I wish we would have done it.
I know we should have. But where we kind of talk about, you know, or have you listened to something out of rhythm? And I don't know, like as a musician, I'd be interested to hear your perspective on that idea of rhythm and when the rhythm is off. Like what do you experience as someone who's musically trained when someone's playing in a different time signature or something?
Well, you know, the best example that actually they brought up in worship planning.
I know what you're going to say.
Is when we're on there and the church starts clapping on their own. No one guided them to start on the right beats or anything like that. And so the church claps, you know, in our being, we want to hear things on 2 and 4. So we want to hear this backbeat 1, 2, 3, 4. So you clap on the 2 and 4.
Yeah.
If you clap on the 1 and 3 and it's not reggae music, then it feel it just sort of like kills the whole group. Yeah. But for some reason,
we our church, go to when, one
we,
and three.
When we clap spontaneously, which I love, so I never want to stop it, they clap on one and three. And yeah. it just like, it grates at my soul. To the point where we did it 1 week, and
I was going to reference this one.
There was a song about rhythm. Yeah. We were like, God, we're joining your rhythm. I said, you know, we're speaking about joining God's rhythm. Let's get on rhythm together. Come on, church, yeah. clap here.
Because everybody was off beat. And yeah. so you're like, let me help you out, you know. But it's that sort of, and I love that example, because even the non-musically trained can know when the drummer's off or when the bassist isn't quite hitting.
Something's not right. I can't tell you what it is.
Exactly. You feel that angst. And it doesn't necessarily, I mean, it does kind of train wreck the song, but you could still fight through it. Like you can still, like even like, and the clapping's a good example, when we as the congregation are off, you guys keep going. Like you, we can get through it. But no one would say, like, that song, quote, flourished. You know what I mean? Because it's just off beat. And I think that's a really good metaphor for when our life gets distorted and out of rhythm with creation, is we can push through it. But you that angst you feel, that anxiety, that stress, that moment when you sit and you feel the adrenaline just rushing kind of through your body, like, that's not flourishing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's not the way we're created.
Okay, have I thought of another one? There was this church I was at where we had a lady that would show up. We never knew when she was going to show up.
Yeah.
But we knew when she was there because she had a tambourine. Did you ever have a tambourine lady?
Not a spontaneous tambourine lady.
And dude, I will tell you right now, a tambourine cuts through everything. It does not need a mic. No matter where it is. You know it's in the room, and this lady did not have rhythm. I don't know what the story was that made her buy a tambourine.
But this is like her home tambourine.
Oh,
like
yeah. She brings it in. Whenever she shows up at church, every now and then, shows up, and it's tambourine time, and you're like, oh, no.
Tambourine time?
Tambourine lady's here. But yeah, we pushed through it.
Oh, God bless
Continue.
Her.
Sorry. Yeah.
No, that's the main essence of it is again, yeah, we can fight the rhythm. Or we can kind of find our lives within that rhythm. And I think that's, you know, that's the lesson from Sabbath.
I also thought that in the Genesis story is really fascinating that this is the first time God calls anything holy.
Yeah.
Which I would not, if you just asked me, what's the first thing God calls holy? I don't know what I would say.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have said Sabbath.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, what is it about that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a I think Tim Mackey of the Bible Project is where I first heard this. But he talks about how there's a here's a $10 word for you, a hermeneutical practice, which is the way we interpret Scripture. In
root
which,
word Herman. Sorry, continue.
Nailed it. but there's a hermeneutical principle of first mention, meaning the first time you hear a word in Scripture, it also functions as a definition.
Oh.
I think he referenced when I heard him talk about this that may or may not be actually an accurate like tool. But nonetheless, like it's interesting to think through in this particular circumstance of, you know, the first time you hear holy, it's giving a sort of definition to it. And if you think about when God calls the Sabbath holy, it is... By essence, he's saying this is a different day than the other 6 days. And that's what we understand as holy, is something that's set apart. Mm. And so when God calls the Sabbath holy, I mean, there's a ton that he's doing there. I mean, so much is packed into Genesis 1 and 2. I mean, you could just spend years unpacking like all the layers that are there. But one of those things is like if the Sabbath is holy, what most religions would designate as holy is usually like material space.
Yeah.
So a holy mountain, a holy temple.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. And so when God then, this story, right, of God says that time is holy, there's a sense in which if you want to encounter God, you don't have to go to a holy space. You just meet God in time. And that was that example I used from Abraham Joshua Heschel, who's a Jewish rabbi, and you know he has this great phrase in his book on the Sabbath where he says that the Sabbaths are our great cathedrals in time.
Ooh.
And what he's saying
is... Who said that?
Abraham Joshua Heschel.
Oh, yeah. I like him.
Big Heschel guy.
AGH.
Yeah. But he talks about, you know, that's how, in so many ways, that's how the Jewish people have sustained their community, is through this practice of the Sabbath,
if
in which
in time.
They meet God not in a physical place, but in time. And so when God sets aside the Sabbath as holy, he's essentially inviting us, if you want to meet me, here's a space you can meet me. Or not even a space, here's a time that you can meet, you know, kind of gather. And that's where, I mean, and what we'll see in the next, this coming Sunday, you know, the two commands in Exodus, and then when the commandments are reinstated or re-communicated in Deuteronomy, it starts off in Exodus, it says remember, and in Deuteronomy it says observe the Sabbath. So there's kind of two commands around that, remember and observe. And think of the origins of the word holiday. It's where we get holy day. And what does it look like to observe a holiday? Like how you observe the 4th of July, you set it aside as different. You probably eat different. You make hot dogs, whatever.
Whoa.
You celebrate. You get together. Like there's a sense in which the Sabbath is a weekly holiday. Yeah, a weekly holiday where we celebrate the goodness of God. And we rally around the goodness of God, disconnecting from all those other things that we chase. Mm. And we celebrate, you know, the holy day.
That's so cool. All I can think is Dick Van Dyke singing, "It's a jolly holiday with Mary."
I don't know that song.
From Mary Poppins?
I don't remember that song. I'm more familiar with the Emily Blunt Mary Poppins, which I thought was really good.
So someone listening to this might listen to, Sabbath is a holiday, and we associate holiday with vacation or day off.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's not. It's different than a day off.
Yeah.
Right? Explain that a little bit.
Yeah. So it's not, over and over often when you see Sabbath talked about in scriptures, you'll see it in reference to a day to the Lord or a day unto the Lord. And so when we think of a day off, or a day set aside, we think of something like what most people's Saturday is probably like. They're not working, but they got a ton of chores to do. They got to clean the house. Maybe that's when you finally, you know, dust the bookshelves, or I don't know, whatever it is that you do. Like, it's set aside as a day off where you just do all the work you don't get paid for. But that's still work that has to get done. And that's a day off. And that, there's nothing wrong with days off. Like, we're all pro days off. We're pro vacations. But I'm certain that all of us have experienced that, either a vacation or a day off, where at the end of it, you were just exhausted.
Most of them. Yeah.
Like, particularly vacations, right? Like, with Lindsay and I have scheduled now, like, our natural habit is that we schedule an extra day off when we get back from vacation just to recover from the vacation, like before the week starts, because we're exhausted from it. Because it's not actually like a, you know, like I think the example I used Sunday was our recent trip to Disneyland.
Disneyland is especially
exhausting.
Oh my gosh.
And beautiful and great and like incredibly, you know, an opportunity where we made a ton of memories, but it's filled with the busyness of entertainment and, you know, for me, it's a ton of churros and like this sort of hedonistic go for it, you know,
the churros and the San Jose Giants churros.
Something magical in the cinnamon
and what they do.
They sprinkle it with pixie dust. Yeah. Tinkerbell cinnamon or something. I don't know. But all that to say is, like, when we fill it up with that, like, that doesn't actually bring rest to our souls. And a day off can give us, even a vacation can potentially restore us physically, but we're more than just physical beings, right? How do we actually get rest for our souls? And that's where a Sabbath, you know, isn't intended to binge watch whatever show you've been behind on, or to just like collapse on the couch and then just sit around not doing anything. It's a day to the Lord. And the way you find rest for your soul is by reconnecting with the Lord. And so that's why this looks different than a Sabbath or than a day off, is because the day off is really, in a lot of ways, again, this is not to denigrate it, but it's centered on me, right? It's about what I want to do, what I need to
treat yourself
done.
Day.
It's a treat yourself day. It's a yes day, right? But a Sabbath is a day not for me, it's for the Lord. And so then maybe a better way to say it is for me and the Lord. And even then, it's about the community of faith and much broader than that.
And your animals.
And the animals, they get to Sabbath.
Even Winston gets a
Sabbath.
You can't just put on his
yoke whole life is a Sabbath. I tell you, his whole life. But that's the distinction. And again, the phrase that, you know, the quote that I think is really good that we talked about on Sunday from Eugene Peterson, In his article in Christianity Today, he says a widespread misunderstanding of Sabbath trivializes it by designating it a day off. And he says, quote, a day off is a bastard Sabbath. Days off are not without benefits, to be sure, but Sabbaths they are not. However beneficial, this is not true, but a secularized Sabbath. And that's, you know, that's an important difference. And so as we're working this practice out, like, it can be easy to descend into do all the things that my self desires and longs for. And Sabbath may be God saying, delight in the creation I've made for you, but we delight in those things for the purpose of reconnecting our souls with God, not to just like veg out and
yeah.
whatever. You know what I mean? Like, there's a difference in posture.
And you've talked to me before, we've talked about this, and you have talked about, like, if you get to the Sabbath and you're so
yeah.
exhausted that all you can do is just stare at a wall, you know, or, yeah. or stare at your, you know, binge watch your whatever.
Whatever. Yeah.
That's a good indicator that the rest of your week is
out of whack.
Way out of whack.
Yeah.
Your priorities are out of whack.
Yeah.
Your, you know, you, that maybe accomplishment, you know, and accumulation are in not in their proper places.
Yeah. Yeah. That came up. I forget. It was a while back. I think I felt convicted on that. That it felt like every time I got to Sabbath, it, you know, which again, we've been doing for so many years, that they felt different. I feel like I couldn't actually rest. Like
yeah.
I was so exhausted, was going so hard throughout the weeks that I would just kind of collapse on the couch, and I couldn't be present to the girls. I couldn't be present to the Lord. Couldn't be present to Lindsay. And it's like, that's not Sabbath, right? Cause my Sabbath is impacting my whole family negatively, where they're having to deal with the fallout of a, you know, a condition of my heart that's distorted around busyness or whatnot. And so if that's the case, like if you find yourself Sabbathing in a way where you're just unable to be present to anyone, you're just collapsing, there's larger problems going on,
yeah.
right? Like that's
not normal.
It's not healthy. Yeah. Not normal and not healthy.
No, it may be normalized at this point, but it's not, it shouldn't
yeah.
be normal.
Yeah. But it's not the intention of Sabbath, right?
This is the brilliance, Kevin, I think of where we started with the vision, because starting with rhythms of silence and solitude and
yeah.
making sure that you are forcing margin into your life, into
yeah.
your family's life, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
With silence and solitude allows you kind of force
yes.
rest
yeah.
throughout the work week. So
yeah.
that when you get to the Sabbath, it can be a life-giving,
yeah.
fulfilling, restful experience.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
good job
soulfully
putting those together.
Restful. Yeah.
Turns
well,
out you do know what you're doing.
Yeah. There's a lot of thought. A lot of people have rallied around this thing, but yeah, there's something to that. The silence is all there. There are many Sabbaths, many little breaks.
So where are we going?
Cultivate that.
Where are we going next week?
So this Sunday we're talking about, so we talked about Sabbath as rhythm. This Sunday we're talking about Sabbath as resistance. And, you know, in a lot of ways, the rhythm piece is attacking that God of accomplishment and saying, if we just jump on the treadmill and work 7 days a week, then we'll accomplish whatever. This week we're attacking that accumulation piece, and we're going to look at the differences between the command in Exodus and Deuteronomy. And in Exodus, when the command of Sabbath is given in the Ten Commandments, it's about Genesis, saying, because God's Sabbath, do Sabbath.
Yeah.
In Deuteronomy, the command, exact same command is given, but the rationale changes. And Moses, who's standing kind of on the edge of the Jordan River, about to cross over, a new generation is about to cross over into the Promised Land, he's giving them the commands again because it's been a generation since they'd heard it. And the rationale is because you were slaves in Egypt. And so we're going to talk about essentially the allure of empire and the way in which what we see in Pharaoh and this quest to accumulate, to make more bricks, to build more storehouses, to store more stuff, like all of that is like the impulse of empire. And we're just going to talk about how that kind of Pharaoh is alive and well in our own world. And the quest for more, and Sabbath is an act where we resist that, where we essentially say we're content, that what God has given us is enough. And Sabbath is a day to sit and enjoy what God's given you, not long for what he hasn't. So we'll attack that
yeah.
God of accumulation.
So just as a reminder for all of you who are kind of on board with us, the practice labs.
Yeah.
Sign up for them. They're going to start on April 2nd, and we're practicing it together. We're going to break bread together.
Yeah. We're essentially going to, they're organized around the Sabbath meal. And so each week we're going to do a Sabbath meal together. And so we'll do little elements of that, as well as then looking at these four kind of the themes or movements of a Sabbath that we're talking about: stop, rest, delight, worship. And then also, like, we're hoping to just create space to ask these kinds of questions of how do I do this with all these different things going on? What does it look like to cultivate Sabbath in our lives? And I have found working those out in community with people is super helpful, just to hear others' ideas and reflections. And we're going to have the whole family together. We want you to invite your kids. We want the whole family around the table, because Sabbath is about the whole family. And so kids are going to be, I think, and I personally think this is just a little bit of my own experience. Kids get Sabbath way better than we do.
Yeah.
Like, they just,
we make them unlearn it.
Yes, we totally do. And so, like, I am really excited to have our kids.
They're going
to
teach us.
I think teach us in a lot of ways about Sabbath joy. So
beautiful. Before we end, I was thinking about what we started with, which is how I start with my announcer voice. And you know where I think that comes from?
Where does it come from?
When I was working at Mancini's Sleep World, the Bay Area's best place to buy a mattress, they actually brought me into a studio and I recorded a commercial for them.
Did you? Like a little voiceover work?
Yeah. Like, hey, my name is Brandon. I'm a sleep expert from San Mateo.
Is that what you guys are called? Sleep experts?
On that advertisement.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I mean, it's better than saying mattress salesman.
Yeah. I mean, are you a sleep expert?
Yeah. Yeah. You sleep on your side or your back?
I'm a side sleeper.